Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
For the first time in a couple weeks, we are back after a W. 49ers beat the Patriots at home. Beat them score-wise was a pretty wide margin of score. And the yardage-wise was a pretty wide margin for yards. But, Rod, here's what I have as our big theme, our one-sentence summary of the game, and I want to get your thoughts on what if you agree with me or if you disagree with me. The injured 49ers play a very sleepy game against a very poor football team and still get the win.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. It was not a clean performance by any means, but it's kind of like I found myself at the end of the game, like you're looking at the stats, and it's like the defensive line did some really good things.
Yes.
Nick had a really good game. The entire defensive line played well, but then it's like the caveat is the Patriots offensive line stinks.
Worse than our offensive line. Line was bad today.
So, I mean, it's one of those things. It's a get right thing. So, I mean, it's the fact that they dominated. They're supposed to dominate against, you know, inferior competition like that. It would have been even more alarming if they hadn't done well. So that was the theme throughout was, you know, there was a long time there where, you know, we didn't have an offensive touchdown. It was Fred's touchdown.
Yeah.
That was the only touchdown for a good chunk of the game. So, I mean, again, a win is a win.
Yeah.
And they were pretty much in control the entire way, but it's still far from clean and far from, you know, this, you know, Mike Tomlin always says, the standard. That is, you know, there is a standard that we have come to expect from this team, and we still aren't playing to that standard.
It is hard to blame the offense on missing Christian McCaffrey when Jordan Mason seemingly runs for 100 yards every game.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm watching this and I'm wondering, okay, what plays are they not calling because these wide receivers could not get open in this game? I know the Pats have a surprisingly good secondary compared to the rest of their team, but there were moments where Brock had like 10 seconds and he just couldn't find anyone. And he's just running around. And when he starts running around, I know some people get excited because like, oh, he's a playmaker. I don't get excited. I immediately think this dude's about to take a hit and I want to see him take a hit. But do you think it's simply Christian? Do you think it's some of the defensive coordinators kind of not figuring out Kyle, but maybe understanding what Kyle likes to do and taking some of that away. Is there anything that you could figure out while you're watching the games?
Well, the one thing that it seems clear to me is that Brock doesn't have Christian there as a safety valve, you know, in the passing game. Juice kind of served that role a little bit, but again, when they go three wides, Juice is the one who kind of comes off the field. So yeah, it's a catch 22 with, you know, the emergence of Juwan Jennings. What that means is Juice doesn't play as much. I mean, it's just, you know, you can only have 11. So when you play three wides, you know, it's one tight end and usually one back, you know, and so that creates one less player. And it's just, the facts are that Jordan Mason is not the receiving threat to Christian McCaffrey is. And that's no slight to him. Again, we've said it before, you know, Christian McCaffrey, I forget who the announcer was, but it was a cogent point. Now, Christian McCaffrey could probably be an all-pro slot receiver if he wasn't a running back. He's just that good. So you're missing that whole chunk of the offense. And while Jordan Mason is effective, it's different. It's just, you know, it's not the same as having the Swiss Army knife that Christian McCaffrey is.
Yeah, no, it's pretty, as I'm watching, it's sort of clear that he is kind of like, if all else fails, he's going to be able you're going to be able to drop the ball off to him. And mm-hmm. They don't have that right now. JP made a nice catch and a nice move. And you kind of wonder what would change if you just did some of those Christian things with him. This might have been the team to do it against, right? Because you know, they were struggling in parts of this game, and maybe JP's one catch was maybe a McCaffrey play, because I thought he looked really elusive, caught the ball well, made a cut, made a move. He felt today like I was really, really comfortable when he had the football. I was like, this dude is moving forward. He's, you know, he's making a cut. He's making a move. And he has become, and I think Greg Olson said it on the broadcast, when you do get McCaffrey back, you do have somebody who you could put in and who you can rely on to let McCaffrey take a couple reps off. And that has been a problem for them, is he just doesn't want to come off the field, and maybe to his detriment. I just think when I see JP, I'm like, this dude is running very confidently. He believes that he's going to make a play. And I thought that was very adamant. I thought he made that very apparent today in the game. And I just thought, you know, I wonder what would happen if they decided to do something Christian like with
him. Just turn him loose. Yeah. And that's true. Maybe he can handle it. I don't know what the apprehension is about doing that, but it's definitely, his role is different than what Christian's is. But the only question, again, I believe that he has proven himself as a definitely a competent second back. And, you know, for some team, he would probably be, even this team, if there wasn't Christian McCaffrey, he'd be happy with him as your starter. Now, the question becomes for a young player is when it is different and now he is called upon to spell Christian, it's different starting the game than it is, you know, I've heard basketball players talk about that, you know, moving, you know, it's being a six man is a skill. I mean, not everybody, you know, it's not something that, oh, you just come off the bench and you play. You know, guys that do that well, like Jamal Crawford and those type of guys, there's a mentality that goes with that. And some guys can't do it. Some guys aren't able to. I know famously it took Carmelo Anthony a long time to be able to adjust his game to that role. You know, he had spent 15 years.
He's probably still bitter about it right now, and he's been retired for a while.
You know, he had spent 15 years, you know, coming in, you know, as a starter and being able to just be into the flow of the game from the beginning. And now you have to, you know, it's like, okay, you're out here now, go. It's not, there's not much of a feeling out process that you kind of get as the starter. So that's going to be interesting to see. You know, again, it's some one of those things that people might, you know, think about, and you might just think that it's seamless, but some people, you know, aren't able to do it. And I'm not saying he can't, but it's different when you get 20 touches and you get into the flow of the game, as opposed to getting 5 touches, you know, interspersed throughout the game. You know, so
I would if they do it, I would love to see the creativity of putting them both in the game and then lining up Christian in the slot and having Jordan in the backfield, and then watching the defense coordinator go, oh shoot, what's mm-hmm. going on here? And then you can give the ball to Jordan, or you could run some mm-hmm. sort of little trickery with, like, just
and the, then it's
just
the keeping thing
the defense on their toes would be really interesting.
And you expound on that by when you have Debo out there, you know, it's, you know, I understand why Kyle is, it makes it a lot easier to get into his bag when he's got Christian and Debo out there at the same time, because he can play all kinds of games with the formation, and those guys can end up literally anywhere in the offensive formation. And like you say, if you go ahead and run, you know, a two-back set, it's kind of the same thing. And even in that, it would be nice that if at some point they flanked out Mason. And, you know, mm-hmm. you can play a lot of games with it when you're at full strength. And hopefully we are getting there. And I hope we'll talk about that a little bit, too, about where you're at on Christian returning.
I saw, and it's the biggest news of the day outside of the game, is Christian, they're going to ramp him up supposedly this week after last week him being in Germany, which we learned on Monday. So the idea that, okay, this is where injury stuff, I get it, these guys don't want to show their hand. But like I said during before the season started, I felt like they were a little dishonest in how hurt he was. Mm-hmm. And so now he doesn't play, for misses first 3 games. Lynch told us we just need to keep him off of his feet. We need to get him to stop trying to rehab this thing. It needs rest. And then he goes to Germany. So jumping from he needs rest to the blood cycling or whatever the idea is around the cells and stuff of why you go to Germany, that was a leap that I was surprised about. So it just continued. It feels to me like I'm just not going to believe anything they say, because they keep kind of covering up what the story is for whatever the poker reason that they do. And now they're saying, oh, we're going to ramp him back up in practice. Well, last week you said he needs to stay off. Then he went to Germany. Now he can come back to practice and you're going to put him through hard workouts. It doesn't really make that much sense to me as far as this timeline and what we're supposed to believe and what we're not supposed to believe. But then I forget the writer, someone wrote it this morning, that the idea is to get him back in November. November is 4 weeks away. So you're telling me that this dude is not coming back until week 8 or later.
Well, that's where, again, that's what I thought, you know, prior to the ramp up thing, was after the bye week. Because even, okay, you ramp him up this week, so I wouldn't think he'd play Sunday. So then he's not going to play Thursday. If you don't play him on Sunday, you're not going to bring him back on a short week.
Yes.
Then you have the Chiefs, Then you have the Cowboys. So maybe one of those 2 weeks, but then you got the bye. So yeah. I think I'm not expecting to see him till at least November 10th. That's what I think.
Which is fine, except the message from the team has been all over the place. During the preseason, week two of the, you know, the preseason games, they're like, nope, Christian is not doing well. We're going to put him on IR and we are going to condition him to be ready by November. We're going to give Jordan Mason the snaps X, Y, and Z. At least the fan base has an idea like, oh, okay. Like we get it. He's more hurt than we realized. And now, you know, he's going to, you know, we're preparing for the second half of the season with him. There's a lot of people who bought and paid top dollar for season tickets who expected to see Christian McCaffrey playing at home for their money. And he's not playing right now. So again, I don't know if they were being purposely dishonest for poker reasons so that teams couldn't prepare. Maybe they thought there was an edge there. You know, these poor, I don't even want to say poor, even though I know you are someone who likes to dabble in the gambling. These people who like bet Christian on all of these different props thinking that he was going to play and he's clearly not playing. I would be really mad about that because of all the information that we had. So,
and you know, knowing gaming the way I do, it kind of smells like somebody knew something, and that's why the line was set so low. And I couldn't understand it, but now it all seems so clear now that 10.5 over 10.5 touchdown number. It's like this has to be a trick line, and yeah, it really was a trick line. The other way, we were the trick.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so before we get to our what we liked about today in the win, I wanted to make a couple of mentions. First of all, when Brad and I started Thompson to Clark, that was before we brought the 49er podcast in. We had a Twitter handle, Thompson to Clark. Like that was our first Twitter handle. Then at some point we got the BSPN one as well. We deprecated the Thompson to Clark. We sunset that Twitter. We're just going to focus on the BSPN Twitter. And what's going to happen for that is we're just going to have more stuff going on. So at BSPN Media, if you follow Twitter, if you're on Twitter, give us a follow at BSPN Media. We will follow back all Bay Area sports fans for the most part. And we're just going to have more stuff. We're just going to do more stuff on that Twitter account. And soon we stream this show on YouTube. We will start streaming on the BSPN Twitter account as well. So we'll start doing that. You can't do it on a normal account, so you have to have a little bit of a premium account. So we're going to test that out for a little while and see if we can get any traction from streaming it there as well live. And then BSPN underscore media is Instagram. And Robert Ramos, our friend Robert Ramos, was sending me videos of the live touchdowns. And so we put those up on the YouTube as shorts. We also put them up on the Instagram as reels. If you want like the crowd view of what was going on and how people were hyped, and Robert actually caught they were both on the opposite side. Like he was kind of sitting kitty corner to where those touchdowns were, but he was Johnny on the spot with his record button. So we put those up if you were interested to see the home crowd and how they were reacting to those plays. I think it was the Warner pick six and then Brock's touchdown, that little fade touchdown to Kittle, which more, it was like kind of like more like a jump ball to Kittle in the corner of the end zone. So those are up there on YouTube and on Reels. Okay. Let's go to our things that we liked, and I'll let you go first. I'll let you throw your first one out there.
Okay. I'm old school. I like have notes. Well, the first thing I liked was the Warner pick six. Mm-hmm. He is just so much. And it's funny that Olsen was talking about it. He just didn't hit on the fact, in all of his praise of Dre Greenlaw, he never hit on the fact of what I think Dre Greenlaw is. He sets the tone. He's the mm-hmm. heart of the defense. Warner is clearly the most talented player. I would say he rivals Nick in that department in what he is able to do, both as a pass defender, as a pass rusher, as a run defender. I mean, there are no holes in his game. And again, that play, just the play alone, was ridiculous. the athleticism that he showed being able to make that play. But I mean, it really did. You know, we hadn't scored two times into the red zone, and we, you know, came away with field goals. And so he led off the touchdown scoring, and it was just I thought it was a big play in the game, and it clearly got everybody fired up. And, you know, that's what it has been, you know, in the recent history, is the linebackers seem to be the guys that do that mm-hmm. that get the team fired up. You know, normally it's Greenlaw who does that, you know, with some of the things that we've talked about on this pod, where he's right tippy toe on, sometimes over the line in terms of his aggressiveness, but his teammates love that shit. He doesn't like, you know, I'm sure Kyle doesn't like the 15 yard flags, but you know, his teammates really get fired up when he gets fired up. And I thought that play today was one of those type of plays where he read the quarterback and jumped it, and, you know, and then, you know, took it to the house, which is just, it was just, I was thoroughly impressed.
And people might be wondering, because they saw Warner come out of the game. It's so funny to me, like, Warner hurts his ankle, and the way that he comes off the field is that he just jogs off. I'm like, dude, isn't your ankle hurt? Why are you jogging off? You know, I guess you don't want to create anxiety by taking the cart or whatever, but I'd take the mm-hmm. cart every time.
Oh, hell yeah.
He hurt. So he got an ankle injury, and he said, and this is a Cam Inman on Twitter said, has the quote, "It was all based off feel. It'd take a lot for me to tap out. We'll get more information as we go with scans, but I feel good right now." And then Matt Maiocco wrote that he'll likely have an MRI on Monday. So he literally said that if he could have played, he would have. So he had to come out of the game. It was that big of an injury for him. So I wonder, you know, we see these injuries sometimes, and the players are so nonchalant with them that you're like, he'll be fine. Like, you know, and so I do wonder if he may miss some time, because he basically made it sound like there's a reason why he came out. So it wasn't just like this, you know, this nagging thing. It was like a painful thing for him. So I'm not saying that he's going to be out, by the way. I'm just saying, based off of how sometimes this happens, I think these guys are fine, and then all of a sudden they're, you know, in a walking boot the next day or whatever. So they're really tough dudes normally, and then when the adrenaline wears off and you go, oh yeah, like my foot's swollen. It reminded me, I've mentioned on the baseball podcast Thompson and Clark, that I was listening to the Bo Jackson audiobook by Jeff Perlman. And you remember when Bo was on the Raiders and they're in a playoff game, and basically his hip goes out and it ends his football career. It happened in the playoffs against the Bengals. He walked off. He got up and walked off the field, and all of the media thought that he was going to be fine. And he was saying that he's going to be fine. And so they hold him out that the next week, and that's when they got killed by the Bills in the AFC Championship game. And the media was really hard on him for missing, and the dude literally had never like a mm-hmm. dead hip, and, you know, tried to he came back and played some baseball, but it just was not the same. Mm-hmm. So when I think of like injuries, it's like these dudes are tougher than, you know, a $2 steak, as Jim Ross would say. And I just hope that for his sake that it's not that serious, because not that Arizona is a world's greatest team in any way, and they got waxed by the Commanders today. But still, Kyler Murray scares me every time we play against him. So I'd hate to see Fred miss a game, but this is a long season.
Yeah, for sure. And again, you look every week and you try to figure out what's what. The NFL is anymore, anybody can get you any week. So it's not the type of thing where you can just like, oh, we'll just rest this guy because we got to. I mean, if that's going to happen, it would be a game like this where you would do that. But in division, you know, the Cardinals are alive, you know, dog, especially with our defense. It was okay today, but their offense isn't any great shakes. It's going to be interesting to see. I don't, you know, obviously we should err on the side of caution and be thinking long instead of short in terms of his health. But if he can go, we sure could use him. I know that for sure.
Yep. All right. My first one on the things that we liked. Kevin Givens and Malik Collins. There were moments in this game where I was like, they can't block these dudes. Like, these guys are just coming right up the middle, and Jacoby Brissett is like running for his life. In the end, in the fourth quarter, Nick turned on the burners, and then he was the guy. But I thought in the middle of that game, there were moments where not that I thought that the Patriots were going to make a comeback or that they were going to score in any big way, but I was like, okay, you know, they're getting these weird kind of just fluky third downs, and we're missing a tackle here, and you know, Ramondre Stevenson didn't even really juke, and Mustafa's like out of the picture, gets flying out of the picture, and I'm like, this is interesting. and then Collins and Givens are just bull rushing through the middle, and I was like, man, you know, this is amazing. Where are these guys? And I think Givens ended up with 2.5 sacks, and Collins had 1.5 sacks for guys who were not necessarily going to be responsible for a big part of the defense based on where they were in the rankings and because of injuries. And I think Jordan Elliott also got hurt today, so they're worried about him. They're hoping it's not ACL related. Those guys stepped up. Now we did say this is against probably one of the worst offensive lines in professional football. Like, Jacoby Brissett, I don't know how this dude's going to last, you know, more than a few weeks the way that he's being hit. But they took advantage of what was there, and I thought they both had really good games.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's all you could ask for, is they really they stepped up. They really did. Again, I heard a little bit before I came to set up, Kyle was talking, and he said that they're going to do the MRI on Elliott, but they've kind of ruled out ACL, but you know, they don't know for sure what it is, but they don't think it's that. So that's good news. At least that's good news, because you know, we are super thin up there, and if you look around the league about the guys who are out there when defensive tackle injuries, they're just recycling old dudes, you know, did it like, you know, 15 years in the league. Some guys that have been out of the league, I forget who it was, on another team, they had signed somebody, you know, he's like a 15-year vet who, you know, didn't go to training camp and was like, you know, ostensibly out of football. But you know, big guys are just, you know, who can play that position are just hard to find.
Yeah. All right, what's your next one?
My next one is the balanced offensive attack. 32 rushes, 27 passes. We're effective at both. it was, you know, and it wasn't just, you know, like moving the chains, you know, Brock hit him with several explosives. Mason had a couple of explosives in the run game. It was just, I felt, a well-called game. The offensive line was a little leaky. Brock, I thought he bailed a couple of times on the line when it might not have been necessary, but I couldn't blame him for feeling the heat because it had been kind of leaky all game.
Isn't that what Man Bun Mark said last year or last week as a quarterback? He said, you know, they talk about happy feet. Every quarterback has to deal with it because you're kind of have that clock going on in your head. And sometimes it doesn't jive with what you're seeing on the field. So, and I thought
these guys are getting there. These guys are getting their ass kicked. I need to protect myself.
Yeah.
Which you can't. I'm not mad at him for doing it. It's just that where it gets frustrating to me is when he does it. It's completely understandable when you're feeling the heat. You know, sometimes you feel it when it's not there. It's phantom pressure. But it's not based on anything in his head. It's based on experience. He's seen the last three times that it has been real pressure. So, you know, I can't blame him, but I was very impressed with the, with just the overall balance. Again, I think what you said in your open was apropos that it kind of had a feeling of going through the motions, sort of, but they were effective, again, that's all you, I mean, really all you could ask against a subpar opponent, that they weren't so laissez-faire that they really gave the Patriots any kind of hope, really. I was very impressed with the balanced attack.
Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
I think it was Davis, our friend Davis, who sometimes checks in with us. I think he wrote on Twitter that this is the first time the Niners had beat the Pats at home in a long time, like I think maybe in like 20 years or something like that. Did you hear that?
No, I did not hear that, but it kind of makes sense. You know, through the Brady era, it was rough sledding against those guys. And you know, couple that with the fact we didn't play them very often. But, you know, I think I might be mistaken. I can't say that for sure. But I know Brady came back as a Buck, but I don't think he played more than twice here as a Patriot. And I know we played back there a couple of times, and those were kind of shit show games.
Well, so what about that? Remember that Friday? Was it a Sunday night game? Kaepernick in the rain. And it was like they were up big, and then Brady started bringing the Patriots back, and it was like this back and forth, like really high scoring game. I just remember Kaepernick, you know, putting 40 or whatever or something like that on the Pats, mm-hmm. in a really good game. When this is the Harbaugh years, obviously, yeah. when the Niners were high and mighty back then. Mm-hmm. But that was interesting because, you know, not that I really remembered the Patriots coming here that often, and not like the Niners have this like big giant rivalry with them either. But I was just trying to remember. I was like, yeah, I don't even actually remember a lot of these games. To add to yours, my next two, obviously we already talked about him a little bit. It was just Jordan Mason. I thought he was really good. There was a couple of times early in the game where I thought, okay, like, they're throwing too much. How about let's just see them stop him first? And then he picked up in the fourth quarter, especially when they just needed to ice the clock. He had that run around the corner that got him to, I think he ended up with like 123 yards or something like that. But also, now, if you're going to look at Brock's stats, and I think he was at 72% completion percentage before the game started, he was only like 15 of 27 today. So not great from that, but he took shots.
Yeah.
They had the big shot down the middle to Debo. There was like a 30-yard pass to Juwan. There was another one, I think, that maybe it was over BA's head or something. I think I'm going to just call BA this year for the rest of the year Red Draws. Because with the shorts last week, you know, I thought this was going to be a game where Brock was going to get him involved, and he made a couple of good catches, but he still was only 2 for 48, so still not there with BA. But I just like the fact that they were taking shots down the field, and they hit a couple of them, and that. We don't usually see that. It's more the intermediary stuff, or like they were saying, Greg Olsen was saying, the yards after the catch is kind of their thing, and they are the worst in the league this year, yards after the catch, which is kind of insane to think about.
Yeah, BA, it wasn't a big number, but again, I heard a stat this week. I didn't fact check it, but it's Mina Kimes, and I ride with Mina. So she said that BA led all receivers in the league in separation percentage.
And, yes. And
he is getting open at a higher rate than any other receiver in the league. And now his numbers haven't jived with that. But apparently those people that watch the film say that he's playing really well. And so it heartens me to know that that is happening, because what that means is at some point it's going to all come together.
Yeah.
You know, last weekend wasn't the week because, you know, JJ went off. But yeah, so it's not like he's playing terrible and not getting numbers. Like even last week, there were a couple times where Brock just flat missed him where he was like just wide ass open. You know, so it's coming. I think he'll make his impact felt before the season is over.
There is a so that stat that you're talking about is called it's a fantasy stat that they have used the acronym of average separation and then score. So I think that acronym was only created so that someone could just call it ass. Yeah, like I listened to the Ringer Fantasy Guys. I like their show. It's a bunch of young dudes, and so they're entertaining. And they talk about this stat a lot, So that's the first time I had heard about it. And then I heard the, and then I heard what you said about that Mina said. Those guys had said that last week, which I thought was really interesting. So average separation score, Brandon Ayuk was first in the league for wide receivers.
Yeah.
Okay. What about stuff that you did not like?
Let's see. Can I give you one more that I liked?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because just because I'm always pretty hard on this guy. Jake Moody's perfect day.
Yeah.
Shout out to him for that 3 for 3. That's all.
What about Joey Sky hitting from 63?
That guy, he even with that little short time he was here, it was like he couldn't make 30 yarders, but he can make 50 yarders. That was the maddening thing about him is from long range, he's money. But then when you give him a chip shot, he's all over the place. Yeah. So, yeah, that was a big kick. I mean, it, you know, when you're, I've been there, there was a kicker, Jason Hansen, he kicked a 63 yarder, I believe, against the Rebels. When I was there, and it's cartoonish. That's so far away that you know, you can't fathom somebody kicking a ball that far.
I mean, but you're a hair behind
the red zone today, and they were talking about the proliferation of 50 yarders.
Yeah.
You know, it's like 50 yarders are the new 40 yarders. I mean, everybody's making a ton of them.
Yeah, you're like right at midfield if you're kicking like a 63 yarder or something like that.
Crazy. You know, and then it's the other thing of now that was at the end of the half. But when you do that, you just give the team such good field position. Yeah, so you got to really believe in your kicker to try that.
Yeah, it's really like a end of the game kick or end of the half kick. Because you're not going to do that in a game where you're worried about the field position just for the mere fact that he could miss. And then, like you said, they're already at midfield. All right. Well, I'll start then. I'll start with my things that we didn't like. As if you thought special teams was going to improve this week. .. Our guy Garendo is like... And see, the thing about it is like I'm thinking of Garendo and I'm like, oh, well, maybe he's just not a kick returner. But he actually was a kick returner in college. He ran right up his offensive or his blocker's back. And it was almost like the blocker's back pad, shoulder pad or something caused the fumble. I don't even know how the fumble came, but that was not a great look. We had money making Mitch at the end of the first half. Just punting a short one to help the Patriots get in good field position. Jacob Cowlings had a couple of punt return attempts and he went more sideways than anything else. Actually, Juice had the best punt return attempt after Cowlings got hurt. And then they also had a couple of punt returns that went for good yardage. So I thought like special teams was just as bad as it was last week. Cowling. But yeah, I thought it was just as bad as it was last week. And that was with a fake punt that, you know, that was successful last week. I was just like, man.
Yeah, it's another one of those things that, you know, it didn't bite us in the ass this week, but it's something that we just need to get cleaned up. You know, if we're trying to get where we think we belong, it's not good. Just not good.
All right, what about you?
Red zone efficiency, 2 for 4 in the red zone, field goals instead of touchdowns. We just, you know, you just think about what a difference, you know, 14 or even 10, and then if you tack on Fred's pick 6, 17. It's just different than 13. And, you know, we just have to be more efficient. We were better on third down this week. Actually, no, we weren't. I'm looking at it now. 7 for 13 is still 54%, which just, I mean, it's not great. It's It's just not. But yeah, the red zone, we've got to make teams pay down there. And, you know, Brock is playing great. Otherwise, it's just like we get to third down and then it stalls, or we have a penalty, or it's just, you know, it always seems to be something as to why we're not being more efficient in those times where efficiency is the most important.
Yeah. All right. My next one is the same one as Shelvin's, which we talked about the offensive line, but specifically the pass protection. I don't like seeing Brock pushed out of the pocket so often. Mm-mm. Some of it is, yeah, he can make a play with his legs. He throws very well on the run. I get all that stuff. But when my guy has to reverse pivot to his blind side, there's going to be a moment where he doesn't see something coming that is going to be bad news for him as he's doing that reverse pivot. And I'm just like, you're doing it too often. You're successful with it, which is probably why he's comfortable doing it right now. He picked up another two first downs today. And then there was another moment where, you know, he's kind of waiting and holding and holding, and then he throws it, and then he leaves himself a little bit unprotected. Now, in today's NFL, it's not as risky as it would have been when you and I were younger. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I would just rather, like, he knows where the pocket is. He knows where the pass rush is coming. But there seems to be an instinct of him to go outside rather than to step up. And maybe it's because he is not 6'5". So mm-hmm. he probably believes that stepping up is going to make the throwing lane a little bit harder for him. But man, just, I'm so worried when he, because, you know, Josh Dobbs and I think Josh Dobbs could probably play a pretty good game with this team. But I don't want to see see it happen. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to see it be sort of the emergency only kind of thing. I don't want Brock to get hurt because he would rather create an opportunity instead of throw the ball away. He is like that. That is the kind of player who he is. But if he's going to be the quarterback of this team, and if he's going to make $55, $60 million a year, whatever it is, we need to stop some of this. Like, I'm okay maybe with it happening at half as many times as it does, but these last 2 weeks, he's running way too much. The last one from last week that we were talking about, they tracked it for 77 yards of him running around and trying to make a play. So it just happens too much, and it's just too risky.
See, and that's the thing with me is what you just said. The last part is it's more about risk mitigation than anything else. Can he make the plays? Sure, he can make the plays, but is it worth the risk? Is the upside of whatever, like last week, you know, it ended up being a 3-yard gain. That's not his exposure to being hit all that whole time. It's just not worth 3 yards. Just get down, throw it away. You know, I can't believe I'm saying this, but, you know, be more like Alex Smith. Just you know, get to the next play. That, you know, in small doses. Now, that can't be your whole game. That was the problem with Alex, is it was that what every play was just, we would just chuck it out of bounds. And Brock clearly can make plays, but I would prefer him to make them from the pocket. Or again, you talked about stepping up. I think, again, I've talked about this before. If you give him the interior offensive line that makes that possible, Drew Brees was one of the best ever at operating and moving. He was, you know, his movement was in the pocket. He would move up and make the play rather than always sprinting out. It's just, you know, for smaller quarterbacks like that, there's nothing good ultimately can come. I mean, you can make plays and that's beautiful, but all it takes is the one time. And we seen the fact that we go as Brock goes. Mm-hmm. And if he is out for any significant time or out for an NFC championship game, it's not a good look for us. It's just, you know, he needs to be out there playing, and yeah, anything that risks that is not worth it as far as I'm concerned.
All right, what else for you?
Penalties. It wasn't as bad as last week, but still, it was in crucial moments. We had them, one in the red zone, one on a third down. You know, it was just those type of mistakes. They just kill momentum and can be part of the reason why your third down and red zone efficiency isn't what it needs to be. If you're adding 5 yards or 10 yards to third down, it's already hard in third and manageable. When you take it out to third and long, the percentages just go way down. So we just need to clean that little stuff up.
Yeah. Some of those penalties were really ticky tack at the same time, and almost were like, you know, I can't only blame it because the Patriots got called for that one as well on that third down play where they caught the pass and threw the backwards pass to get the third down. But then they got called for a hold or a push in the back, I think. Mm-hmm. But yeah, some of those were pretty questionable. But against a better team, they would have been something that we would probably talk a lot more about on this show. It's just the fact that it was the Patriots that didn't really hurt them. But yeah, that's 2 weeks in a row where in inopportune times they're getting flags thrown. So I don't know if you're Shanahan, like you see it, you know what's going on. You're talking to your coaches. It's not like you have 2 days to get this stuff. You know, the practice schedule is much different today. So I think it's probably just more about, you know, certain technique or whatever, or just, hey, they're calling this more than they have been, which is why there are more flags. Just be a little bit more aware of this. Like the one on George, I'm not sure. I guess it was the jersey grab that maybe the referee thought his hand was somewhere further than it was on the jersey grab. I'm not sure about that one, but that should have been a touchdown, and that one got called back, and they were really upset about that one. But yeah, you know, it's not like just because we don't believe that they were actually penalties, they're still getting called. So,
right.
Okay. I didn't really have another one, and if you have another one, let me know. The only thing that I thought was kind of sloppy was the end of the first half and how that went down, and then the opening turnover, which allowed the Patriots to score on back-to-back play, like in a matter of minutes, and that was pretty sloppy. Like you don't see really good teams handle those situations, and that's like the opposite of what Shanahan wants, because he wants to score. And then he gets the ball back, and then he scores again. Like right, that's his thing, and it absolutely worked against the Niners on this one.
Yeah, I don't really have anything else other than I was gonna mention. I would like us to figure, but at this point, other than putting Debo out there, I don't know what we have to do with like the punt return game. I guess we're just going to be satisfied with, you know, if we can just get them field, that would be great and not fumbled. It would be nice if we had a returner, and it just, I don't know. It seems like one of those things that we talked about last week that we just don't seem to put an emphasis on. It's not something that seems to be a priority for the team.
Yeah. Matt Barrows says that Kyle's mentality is just don't screw anything up, and when you have that mentality and you're not trying to make plays with your special teams, you're just playing very defensive and passive, that you aren't making plays, but then when you're giving up a play, it just looks even worse because you can't do anything.
Exactly.
All right, let's talk about the blame pie of last week. When the Niners win, it is not a blame pie. It is a credit pie. How did you split up your credit pie this week?
I gave 45% to the defense, the pick six, the pass rush, six sacks, and then a bunch of quarterback hits on top of that.
I think I saw that Nick had nine quarterback hurries or something like that.
That's crazy. They were poor Jacoby Brissett. You know, they held him under 200 total yards, 3.5 yards per play. That's crazy. Yeah, it was the defense definitely set the tone, you know, especially, and they started the touchdown scoring, and then I went 40% with the offense. The run game, they dominated time of possession. It was balanced like Kyle would want, you know, damn near, you know, 50%, 50-50 run versus pass. We hit some chunk plays in both facets. Great game by the offense. And then, you know, 15% I gave to Moody. And that was even with, you know, that last punt was kind of shaky, but overall Wisniewski's money making Mitch, his yards per punt wasn't awful. But yeah, he was still a little sloppy with the fumble and all of that, but I gave him 15%.
Here's some interesting stats. So Brock and JP lead in yards passing and yards rushing. So they're both number one in the NFL at their respective positions. And here's just, you know, some Brock love. Most passing yards in the quarterback's first 25 career starts. Brock Purdy, number one. Number two surprised me. Jeff Garcia, all time, first 25 starts of his career.
Oh, wow.
Number two. And also, one for JP, most rushing yards by an undrafted player. This comes from Nick Wagoner. Most rushing yards for by an undrafted player through the team's first four games of a season in NFL history. 2010, Arian Foster. 2004, Priest Holmes. 2024, Jordan Mason. So Mason is like less than 30 yards behind the first four games of Holmes in 2004. If you remember, if you were playing fantasy football back then, Priest Holmes was a beast back then in fantasy football. So Jordan Mason is in elevated status there for his first four games this year. Okay, so last part of this show before we talk about next week is our player of the week.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
So who do you have as your player of the game?
I had several candidates. Could have been Brock. Could have been Nick. I went with, I think, for the second time this season, Fred Warner.
In half of a game.
Yeah,
he had seven tackles in the first half.
Seven tackles, a pick, a touchdown. Yeah, it was. And I mean, it wasn't just like your run-of-the-mill pick. It was beautiful how he read the play, jumped it, and then, you know, turned into offense and took it to the house. So, yeah, that's my guy.
Yeah, that's a great one. And, you know, you could throw like Nick Bosa was he was working hard to get his sack. Like there were two that he was in on that he was trying to get credit for that were not him. I think he had an assist on Evan Anderson's sack. And then there was one where Jacoby Brissett actually gained a yard that Nick was like trying to get credit. He's like, yeah, that's mine. No, dude, he is a 1 yard gain. But then at the end there, he got the strip sack, fumble recovery, all in one. That was it was an awesome play, but it was also kind of garbage time, and they were just teeing off on dude. So, you know, he was bringing it, and you kind of sense that he was getting a little frustrated because he was getting there, but not quite. And he finally broke through at the end. And then, you know, Jordan Mason, of course, on a longer list, had a really good game. He had the one touchdown and the other one that was taken back. So next week we have the Arizona Cardinals, who did not look fantastic today. Jaden Daniels is the truth, at least early in his young career, he is the truth. And Commanders fans have to be absolutely head over heels for this dude. So they beat Arizona 42-14. And he is 26 of 30, Jaden Daniels is. And his completion percentage, I think before the game started, was maybe like 80% or something like that. So he continues that. And Kyler Murray, Kyler Murray had a good game. They just were not in the game whatsoever. Like, you look at the stats and you're like, wow, like Arizona, they're counting stats looked fine. You know, they rushed for 181 yards. Kyler was 16 of 22. Seemed like a lot of short stuff. I didn't actually watch the game. I saw some highlights. But man, Commanders ran away from these dudes, and now they are 3-1. Arizona's 1-3, and they've given up 106 points in the four games so far. 49ers at home Sunday afternoon. It's another game in which they should take care of business, but I would say that if they played the same kind of game that they did today, it'll probably be a little bit closer against Arizona, just because of the fact that Kyler can make plays. He's got Marvin Harrison Jr. James Conner is going to, you know, James Conner and JP are kind of similar in that they move the chains like they do. So I think the game is going to be a tougher game, and I think they will need to play a lot better to beat the Cardinals like we think that they should beat the Cardinals.
It's going to be interesting to see how we go about defending Marvin Harrison Jr., because he is a matchup nightmare. He's just big and fast, and he's a new age receiver. It's just going to be interesting to see what we decide to do. Are they going to try to man up Mooney with him? Or are they going to try to zone him? I mean, how are they going to crack that nut? I'm interested to see that, because him and Kyler, Kyler has played pretty well against us. I just don't want to see them go off and jump us. Because, at one point I think going into this game, we were like 30th in defense. It was not pretty at all statistically. So we'll see.
They were giving up the most yards per play.
Yeah, that's, not great.
Can I say one thing which makes last week's loss feel even worse? Did you see they lost to the Bears, the Rams?
Yeah, they were, and that's the thing that's so disheartening is we did what we were supposed to do offensively against them. They, they can't guard anybody, and JJ's 175-yard game is just, proof positive of that. Yet we figured out a way to let them hang around and steal one in the end, which is like you just said. And I think we're going to go back. We'll look back around week, 15, 16, 17, and that will be one of the games that we will wish we had back. We should have beat them dudes.
Yeah, totally. All right, we will be back next week after 49ers and Cardinals. Hopefully they can get some good injury news. And I know Kittle was also kind of banged up at the half, but he did play in the second half. Crossing our fingers on Fred, Jordan Elliott as well, and hoping that people who are injured currently, like CMC, We need some good news, man, because 2-2 out of the gate is fine. I'm completely fine with 2-2 out of the gate. But these injuries and the inconsistency in the play is a little worrisome, but it's a long season. I think the injury luck is a big, big thing for this team, especially with how many consecutive seasons they've gone into the postseason and just added games. So, all right, we will be back next week. Thompson to Clark is tomorrow for the end of the baseball season. Brad and I will be back talking about the way the Giants ended and the postseason in baseball. Kind of be pretty interesting. And Shohei just
wow,
off. And so we'll talk about all those things. Aaron Judge too went off. And so that'll be tomorrow. Thompson to Clark, probably live streaming around 5:30 Pacific is my guess. That's usually when we do it, but sometimes Brad's schedule could be a little wonky. So, all right, next week, Rod and I will be back. So for Rod, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.